It's Gwen and Jay here for another episode of the Fire Drill Podcast.
In this episode, we discuss several travel hacking strategies, including a lesser-known trick called fuel dumping, I swear it's not what it sounds like, couch surfing, and building a business around travel.
We invited two travel wizards to be on the podcast today, and this is their story.
Wingardium Leviosa.
No, it's Wingardium Leviosa.
Oh.
Welcome to Fire Drill Podcast, where side hustles, savings, and creativity lead to financial independence. With your hosts, Gwen from Fiery Millennials and Jay from Millennial Boss.
Hey, everybody. So excited to bring these two guests on the show today. We have Diana and Hope from the Movement blog. We are pumped to bring them on because they are not only world travelers, but they've achieved that perfect balance of either being in school or working while also pursuing their passion for global travel. So welcome, guys.
Hey, happy to be here.
And of course, I have my wonderful co-host, Gwen, as well.
Hello.
Okay, so let's kick it off. So why don't you two tell us about yourselves?
Okay, well, I'll start. I am Diana, one half of Movement Blog. I am a lawyer by trade, but I actually just quit my job earlier this year to travel more. And now I work online. I've been to over 20 countries on 4 continents in the last 4 or 5 months since quitting my job. And life has just been a dream.
All right. I'm Hope, the other half of Movement Blog. So I'm a student. I'm entering my junior year at the University of Michigan. I'm studying information, so like user experience, social media marketing. So that's all going to really help with the development of our blog. I mostly blog about how to travel as a student, budget travel, because, you know, poor college students need that. But yeah.
Well, welcome, guys.
Thank you.
We're delighted to have you on today.
So I think we will kick it off by talking about one of, I believe, my favorite posts on your blog. You wrote about how you balance travel with work. And I think, Diana, I'm going to kick this over to you first. I believe it was about you, how you can use all of your weekends to travel. Can you tell us a little bit more about the reason that you wrote that post?
Yeah, absolutely. So, like I mentioned earlier, I was practicing as a lawyer when we started our blog. We started our blog last summer. I was working at a law firm, and if you guys know any lawyers in your lives, you know, the lawyer lifestyle isn't exactly the best lifestyle for people who like to travel a lot. So I really put a lot of thought into how can I make the most of my weekends and just the most of any free days that I have to travel. So the post is basically about taking advantage of your weekends, but it's also, it also gives a lot of tips for people who are looking for new jobs in what they should consider in the new workplace, or people who already are in stable jobs and maybe want to talk to their bosses about getting more vacation time or maybe working remotely. But I was just inspired to write that post because I had gone through the same struggle, and I know that a lot of people do as well. And I just wanted to throw out some tips for people who, you know, want to pursue their careers, have a good career lined up, but also want to travel at the same time.
So when you were an attorney, how many weekends per year were you traveling? Were you traveling all 52?
Not 52, but I was definitely, I would say I was gone more weekends than I was at home.
Wow.
For sure.
That's amazing.
That is incredible work-life balance for an attorney.
Yeah, you know what I tell people, I say I have friends who will work until 8 or 9 p.m. every night. Some of them will even go until 1 a.m. sometimes, depending on their trial schedule. And to me, you know, sometimes it's unavoidable, but most of the time, if you want to set aside time for yourself, for your own life, for travel, for your hobbies, whatever you want to do, you can. And I think it's a lot of the times just about putting your foot down and valuing yourself and valuing your own time and what you can contribute to your company. And if you get your work done in this, you know, fewer hours than it takes somebody else, then there's no reason for you to sit around in the office just to be there.
What were some of the places that you went when you were working?
For the weekend trips, I went mostly just within the US or Canada. Like Hope mentioned, our parents live in Toronto, so I would go to Toronto a lot or the surrounding areas. Last year I went to, took weekend trips to, Austin, Denver, Seattle, New York, DC. I mean, a lot of the major cities. We actually went to Iceland for a long weekend last year as well. So that's something that people might not think about, but Iceland is actually very close to the US if you're located on the East Coast. I think it's only like a 5-hour flight or something, and you can find really cheap flights on WOW Air. And also Iceland Air was doing, I think they're still doing a special where if you buy a ticket from the US to Europe, you can get a free layover in Iceland. So it's like getting a free flight to Iceland.
That's super cool. So when you were leaving on a Friday, I know sometimes I want to leave early, but I feel kind of guilty. Did you just work it out with your boss that she knew you were leaving early, or how did you arrange that?
So I was fortunate enough at my firm where it was kind of like, so I'm not sure if you're familiar with how, if you have lawyer friends or whatever, but for us, we just have to get a certain number of billables in every year. And if, as long as we meet our billable requirement, there's, you know, no one really cares what time you get into the office or what time you leave. So if you want to get in earlier and get work done early, that's, and leave early, that's fine. Or if you want to go on later and stay later, that's fine. So, and we were also a more technologically advanced law firm, which is not saying much for a law firm, but at least we were able to work from our computers. We were able to access our work computers remotely. So, sometimes I would just send in a message and say, hey, I'll be working remotely on Friday. You know, I'll just make sure to check my email throughout the day and be able to access my calls and things like that. But, then that would allow me to leave Thursday night and kind of have a long weekend.
But you didn't necessarily ask for permission to do that. It was just more of a declaration.
Yeah. Yeah. And that kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about it's, a lot of the times, to me, it's really about putting your foot down and valuing yourself and your own time. Because I know people, there were people at my firm who, you know, would get really nervous about asking for time off and things like that. But I would just tell my boss that I was going to be working remotely. And it's, I mean, I made sure to check my emails and get calls. So it's never been an issue. I think had I said that I would be working remotely and then I wasn't accessible all day and something big came up, that might have been more of an issue. But I knew my worth and I knew my value. I always got my work done. Other than that, I don't see any reason to just sit in the office just to be there.
Well, and like my mother says, it's easier to get forgiveness than permission.
I agree with that completely.
Great. So during this time, Hope, were you in university yet? And were you going with her?
Yeah, so I have been in university for the last 2 years. I usually did not go with her. We went to Iceland together. But other than that, it was pretty hard for me to take time off as many weekends as she did, just because in university, it's not like you just go to work and then you're done. You kind of go to class and then there's always more that you can study, more that you can do. And so, yeah, she took most of those trips by herself. But this summer I did intern in Berlin. And so my internship was like a 9-to-5 job. And I found myself traveling a lot on weekends also. And it was kind of a struggle because I would not really like tell my boss that I was going to ask for permission to leave. So I'd buy late flights on Friday nights and then I'd fly back in really early Monday morning. And so those trips didn't give me much time to rest for work on Monday because I'd still go in all day.
I definitely did some of that as well. The red eye flights.
Yeah, honestly, I wouldn't necessarily recommend it. Because work on Mondays was just a nightmare.
It was rough. Did you fly Ryanair at all?
Yeah, I flew a lot of Ryanair because I was stationed in Berlin. I flew a lot of Air Berlin. Yeah, I think those were the two main ones.
Ryanair blows my mind. Every time I'm on there, they're trying to sell you like e-cigarettes and lottery tickets and encourage you to use your phone. You're like, what kind of world is this? And how am I sure this plane's going to land if they're doing this crazy crap up in the air?
Yeah, they're ridiculous, though. At some points, there are flights from Berlin to places in Italy for €5. And these were times that would have worked for me. So like Fridays. So yeah, they're
I mean, I'll let them sell me stuff if it means I can fly for 5 euros.
Yeah, that's so true. I've flown them like a dozen. I'll take them.
Yeah.
But print out your boarding tickets ahead of time. Lesson.
Yeah, definitely familiarize yourself with their different policies because there are a lot.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So what is your favorite place you guys have been? I guess I'll ask Diana first.
Ever?
Ever.
Ever.
That's a really hard question because it's just so hard to compare all these different places. But one of my favorite places in the world is actually Iceland that I mentioned earlier. It's one of the most beautiful places I've been to. Although it has gotten very touristy in the last couple of years, because the first time we went was in November of 2015. And we would just drive around and literally stop in the middle of the road and get out and take photos. And that there was no problem with that at all because there just weren't any cars on the road. But then I just went back in March of this year, and you definitely could not stop in the middle of the road and get out and take photos because there's so much traffic.
Hmm.
So if you want to go to Iceland, you should definitely go sooner rather than later because it's only going to get more and more packed. But recently I also went to Southeast Asia. I went all around Southeast Asia, and I really enjoyed Myanmar and Laos. They're just such beautiful countries, and it's really beautiful to see people living in these third world countries who are so generous with the little things that they have. The people there were so great, and there's a lot of mountains. The scenery there is great, so I would recommend that as well.
So I'm assuming that you went on that trip right after you left your job.
Yeah. So literally my last day of work, I headed to the airport straight from work and I went to Europe for just like 10 days or so. I went to, that's when I went back to Iceland for the second time. And then I also went to Ireland, Scotland, England, and just like a short stop in Paris. And then right after that, so then I went back to Chicago for literally a day. Just did laundry, changed my clothes, and then went to Southeast Asia for a month.
That is dedication.
Working as an attorney, you're probably doing well financially. What was the reason that you decided to leave?
Yeah, that's a great question. First of all, the kind of law I was doing insurance defense. So I was helping insurance companies make more money. And it was just really hard for me to find any purpose or meaning in that work. I also just, you know, even though like I wrote that post about how you can travel for 120 days a year with a full-time job, that is still limited to, you know, with weekend trips, you can't go to Southeast Asia on a weekend trip. So I knew I wanted to travel more and I knew I would never get to do that as a lawyer. So I decided to take the plunge and quit. I just didn't want to look back one day and just wonder where my days went and feel like I wasted my 20s sitting in a stuffy office, not really doing anything memorable.
Oh my gosh, are you me?
Are we the same?
I think a lot of us can relate to how you're feeling or how you were feeling before you left.
I think something with our generation too is, you know, we think more about like, what, like, just because society says that you're supposed to go through life in a certain way, go to school, get a good job, things like just because society says you should do that, why does that mean you have to do it? Or is there something more?
Did you worry about what friends or family would think about your decision?
To a certain extent, yes. I think for a small group of my friends, it was maybe hard for them to understand why I would give up such a good job with good pay to, you know, like do nothing according to them. But no, for the most part, my friends were all very supportive. My family was supportive. Hope obviously loves to travel as well. So she gets it 100%. My boyfriend was supportive. A lot of my friends are like, I'm super jealous. I want your life. So they enjoy following along on my travels. So overall, it was an easy transition for me, I would say. I'm thankful for that.
Hope, where's your favorite place you've been this far?
Okay, so every time people ask me this question, I have two different answers. My favorite place to live would, well, first would be Toronto, but that's just because I'm biased. But from my travels, my favorite place to live is Berlin. It was just, I spent around almost 3 months there, and it was just perfect. I loved everything about it, and I could really see myself living there long term. Super diverse place. Well, at least the area I lived in was very diverse, Kreuzberg. And yeah, overall, just it has such a rich history. Not always a good history, but it's really cool to see how far they've come from, you know, mistakes that they've made in the past. And the city just has so much, so much different culture and like art. Their art scene is unreal. So yeah, Berlin, I would absolutely love to live there in the future. But my favorite place in terms of like nature and scenery would probably also be Iceland or somewhere in Western Norway. Diane and I did the Trolltunga hike there. It was very long and tedious, but so beautiful. And the Faroe Islands too was very, very beautiful.
Now, traveling with your sister, I know if I went with my sister, we might get into some fights. Do you ever get into sister fights when you're on your trips together?
I don't think we get into fights. We get into more intense discussions.
Intellectual sisters.
Exactly. Some maybe not very nice things that we say to each other, but I think we're both... So I really like to communicate my feelings. I always talk things out if I'm not happy with something. So if she does something I don't like, I just mm-hmm. tell her straight up. And she's the type of person who I know can handle it. She also likes being very blunt and straightforward. And so in that sense, like to an outsider, it might sound like we're, I don't know, not being very nice to each other, but that's kind of just how we communicate sometimes.
I'm the same way, and I think it's an older child thing. I'm the older sibling, and I feel like I'm very blunt sometimes.
You know, I don't know, though, because I'm the baby, and I am not afraid to tell anybody what I'm thinking. But, I mean, I've been on a road trip with my sister in three different countries and on three different continents, and I don't know. I mean, like, yeah, like you said, there's a lot of communication that has to happen. I mean, I love my sister to death, but there are certain situations where one or both of us gets, you know, stressed out or like I'm fighting jet lag or she's fighting jet lag, you know, and then we just have to recognize, you know, that's the situation that's occurring. And you're like, okay, I'm not mad at you right now, but I'm feeling a little stressed out, tired, whatever. And it's not your fault, but I'm sorry if I snip at you, you know, type
or hangry, getting all hangry.
Oh, that is the story of my life. You're speaking my language.
That's a big one.
Or my sister needing caffeine, like stat.
I need coffee every single day. I stopped drinking it for a couple of weeks, and then I realized I'm missing out on life. Coffee is so good. What am I doing? So I went back to it, and now the monster still lives.
It is such a drug.
It is.
So Hope, so you traveled on the cheap. What are some ways that you recommend doing that? I mean, obviously, €5 flights can't happen all the time. So how would you recommend keeping travel cheap?
Yeah, so I've actually written quite a few posts about this. So in terms of like traveling to places close to where you live, my first year of college, I went to school around Boston. So I took a lot of trips to New York City because it's like around a 4-hour drive, not very far. And there's a really good bus system on the East Coast. And so there are certain buses that you can take from Boston to New York City that are $1 one way. And then you can just get there. Yeah, you just really have to look hard for these things. A lot of it just requires time, like having time to spend to look for, you know, good deals. And then after getting to New York, just I guess not staying in like the nicest of places. Sometimes I would do couch surfing. Actually, I think all of freshman year I did couch surfing every time I traveled. If anyone's not familiar with the concept, it's actually like a website and a phone app that you can go on, create an account, and then people will put their homes up for you to stay in for free. And the idea behind it is just letting people experience places from a local's perspective instead of just seeing all the tourist traps. And so, yeah, couch surfing is completely free. So that takes care of accommodation. sometimes it's not always safe. So definitely be careful about that. And then just, I don't know. I mean, a lot of money is spent on food, but if you don't have money to spend on food, then there are a lot of cheap food options, especially in like bigger cities. Just, you know, go a bit outside of the touristy areas and things will be a lot cheaper. And then internationally, it's just being able to find really cheap flights, because that's usually the biggest cost. And so I have a lot of little tricks that I use for that too. Just like using the right websites. You know, we use Skyscanner, we use Momondo, Student Universe for if you're a student.
Have you heard of a website called statravel.com?
Yeah, so I've actually tried using that one, but I found the prices weren't quite as good as Student Universe, which is the other one exclusively for students. But STA Travel, yeah, definitely just like I'd recommend looking through all of the websites, because some places might be cheaper on one website and some places cheaper on another. But yeah, there are also just a lot of other tips and tricks for finding cheap flights. There's this sort of secretive method called field dumping. I won't go too far into it because people who do use it are just very secretive about how to use it and about revealing the secret.
Wait, is this, let me see if I know this. So I think this is when you book multiple legs, but then you actually don't go on the last leg of the trip. Is that it?
Yeah, kind of. So that's one way you can do it. Essentially, the idea behind it is for a lot of flights, if you go on something like Google's Matrix software, ITA Matrix, it'll show you the cost breakdown of a flight. And then if you click on a specific flight, it'll tell you the YQ surcharge. And a lot of times for more expensive flights, the base fare might be like $80. And then the YQ surcharge, which is the fuel cost, will be like $300. And so what happens when you fuel dump is sometimes you can add a leg to the beginning or the end or even the middle of a trip. And then I think the middle, I'm not sure about that. Definitely beginning or end of the trip. And then it'll completely eliminate this fuel surcharge. So you can book a very short, like a very cheap one-way ticket for $50. And so instead of the $300, you're just paying for the $50. And so that decreases the cost a lot. The trick is just finding flights that'll work for the 1X is the beginning and the 3X is the after. Yeah, it's kind of a complicated thing, but definitely look into it if you're interested.
I'm totally taking notes.
So you guys are travel hackers.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but
no, you're travel hackers. Do you ever read boardingarea.com?
No.
That's it's a website that pulls maybe like 20 to 30, and maybe even more than that, blogs about doing exactly like the things that you said, travel hacking, getting airline points and doing all that.
That's good.
Do you guys write about that at all on your website?
Yeah, it's on one of our posts, the 8 proven tricks to finding cheap flights, but we haven't written a post exclusively about that. I'm not sure if we will.
We'll link to that one in the show notes.
Sorry?
I said we'll link to that one in the show notes.
Okay, great.
Yeah, and if you ever want to do a guest post on millennialboss.com, hit me up.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
For sure.
Cool. Okay, that's awesome. Good trick to know. So I want to dig into the couch surfing piece a little more, because when I think of couch surfing, I think of a creepy person equivalent to someone who's trying to get you into a white van and drive you away. Have your experiences with couch surfing, have any of them been like that? And do you have any tips on how to vet the people beforehand?
Yeah. Okay. So it definitely does require some, like, I guess just call it like street smarts. Because on couch surfing, there are certain profiles where it'll be like, you know, like a single man. And then they'll have 40 positive reviews from like, you know, all like Asian women. And then you're kind of like, oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know why this is happening. But maybe like that's kind of a red flag. Like, stay away from that. Another good trick, I guess, for couch surfing is just try your hardest to meet up with them in person beforehand. And then just trust your gut instinct. If you're sensing something's kind of off about them, just spend the money for a hotel room. You know, it's not worth taking the risk. But Yeah, honestly, I've only had positive couch surfing experiences. I've read about so many like negative ones, but one of them was actually, so I got to New York City, very spontaneous trip. I decided like the night before that I was going. And so I messaged some people on couch surfing and no one got back to me. And then at this point, I was just in New York. It was like 10 p.m. And I was like, crap, I don't have anywhere to stay tonight. And so finally someone messaged me. And then they said, I can take you in. It's like me and some friends, we stay here. And so I was like, great. Okay. So this time I didn't get to meet up with them in person beforehand. So it was kind of risky, but they ended up just being like the most amazing people. There are other couch surfers there. Actually, a lot of my experiences have been with other couch surfers also. It's not just me there. But yeah, it was just really, really great. Another time I couch surfed in Miami. I won't mention this person's name because he wishes to remain anonymous. But basically, I ended up staying with this guy and he was like, I don't know, like a multimillionaire or something.
What?
Yeah. Had like a Bugatti, a Maserati. His flat was like overlooking. It was like a penthouse suite.
Holy moly.
It was insane. I had no idea what I was walking into, but it was a great experience.
Hell yeah. So all you have to do is you look online, you find people, you book it, and you show up. And what incentives do they have to have you there? They just want the companionship and the excitement of meeting someone new?
So a lot of it is about the community and just giving back. So a lot of couch surfing hosts have been couch surfers themselves. And so that's kind of their way of saying thank you to their host is, you know, that they'll host other people. It's all just sort of like a cycle of giving back and just, you know, sharing your like local knowledge with travelers. So for example, like, I don't know. I think it's just the general vibe of the entire website. Obviously, some people are there for the wrong reasons and they kind of just ruin it for everyone else. But the people who are there for the right reasons, they're there for the community, for the idea, the concept behind it. And I really believe in the concept. It just sucks that there are, you know, bad people out there who are just not, you know, who are just ruining it for others.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why I think it's so weird when it's just like an app, you know, when that's basically all I did last year. But the only difference was is that I just traveled around the U.S. to people that I already knew. Okay. Like I went to Maine and Dallas and a whole bunch of other places. And it was just to hang out with people that I already knew. And they graciously offered me to stay there. But I mean, like, that was kind of different because I knew them ahead of time because we're friends. But I mean, it's like the same concept.
I think I would like it because I love meeting new people and I love going somewhere and just talking to randos. It's one of my favorite things, honestly. Like, I'll go somewhere and travel and just talk to somebody. But one book ruined this for me. Have you guys read Vagabonding?
No.
By Rolf Potts. So he's recommended a lot by Tim Ferriss. And this book is really good. I really recommend it if you'd like to travel. But it kind of talks about existentialism and all of the thought process that goes into travel. And it kind of calls bullshit on the fact that you want to meet people in other places when you're in your own hometown and you don't want to meet anybody. You don't go down the street and just randomly start talking to people. So it's a really good book and it kind of like makes you think about why you want to travel and are you trying to escape something from home? It has many different layers to it. So I really recommend it.
It's on my list.
Put it on the list.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting.
Mm-hmm, yeah, I'll definitely check it out.
So let's talk a little more about, Diana, how you prepared to quit your job. Was it something that you did suddenly or did you have a little bit of a roadmap in place before you did it?
It was not something I did suddenly. I had actually thought about quitting my job since last summer. So I wasn't happy at my job. I, you know, like the whole thing with not being able to find any meaning or purpose in my job. I think that feeling was always there. And I didn't really like the boss that I reported directly to. So I'd been thinking about it. But at that time, I had only been at my job for about 8 months. And I wanted to get to like close to at least 1 year, close to the 1.5 year mark. So I just stuck it out. I actually last September booked my Southeast Asia flight in March of this year. So 6 months out. So I had
set a deadline for myself at my job back in September for March. And what I told myself was basically, you know, like, I have this ticket to Asia in March. I'll quit my job before then, unless something drastic happens at my job that convinces me to stay, in which case I can always just cancel my flight and stay. And so March rolled around, nothing really changed. And so I put in my 2 weeks and I left.
Woohoo!
And then from the financial side, I had saved up some money to travel because I didn't have anything lined up when I quit my job because I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I just knew that I didn't want to work in a law firm again. So that's when I started, you know, thinking about different ways to make money online, thinking about side hustles, which I know you think about a lot from reading your blog. And then that's when I figured out, yeah, I found some ways to, you know, make money online, and I've been working online, which allows me to travel more because I can work from anywhere.
That's amazing. How much money did you save?
I had actually over 10,000 saved, but obviously I didn't want to deplete that. So I started looking for side gigs pretty soon after I quit because I knew it would take some time and I wanted to give myself a big enough buffer where I wouldn't have to dig into the savings at that much, ideally.
So you quit and you had savings, but you didn't have any type of passive income coming in beyond that.
Correct. Yeah, we were bringing in a little bit of income from our travel blog, but it was definitely nowhere near enough to sustain me full time.
That's awesome. And now have you been able to get to the point that you can sustain yourself through your travels?
Yes. Yep.
That's amazing.
Yeah, which is pretty crazy to me.
So I know nothing about running a travel blog or the travel blog space. So why don't you guys tell us a little bit about travel blogging in general?
Well, I think travel bloggers approach traveling from many different angles. Our travel blog is mostly about they're mostly destination guides. They are, you know, tips for travel, a lot of budget tips, like Hope just went over. The travel blogging space, I would say, is pretty saturated, but overall, I would say that travel bloggers are all very supportive of one another. Because I'm also friends with some bloggers in other spaces like fashion. And just from what I've heard, it seems like the travel blogging space is one of the more friendly spaces. And through travel blogging, we've made a ton of friends. We've met up with bloggers from all over the world. We've gone to travel conferences and met people. We've gone on trips together with people. I just went to Cuba with a travel blogger. Never met in person before, but we had, you know, talked online a lot and we read each other's blogs. So that was pretty cool.
Overall, that's my favorite part about blogging. Gwen and I became friends because I commented on her blog and then we ended up Skyping.
That's awesome.
And the rest is history. But yeah, it's just a lot of people are hesitant or doubtful about starting a blog, and meeting people who are also really geeking out about the same thing you are is what is so awesome about it.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And then meeting people too who, you know, quit their jobs to travel and things like that, and knowing that I'm not just crazy for doing that, that there are other people out there doing it too, that's helpful too.
I would say that the travel blog community and the personal finance community are like two like safe corners of the internet. Everybody's very supportive and very nice to each other and like wants to work together instead of being like, oh, you're getting more views than me, you know, skip her, I'm out, you know, or like, you know, whatever. Like, we're all supportive.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. I think it's both of these spaces, we genuinely want to see each other succeed and help each other get there.
So is the blog how you're supporting yourself right now?
No, I'm doing some other gigs online. It's like the whole side hustle thing. Right now, my main thing is I'm doing some affiliate marketing online. That seems to be the biggest thing. So I'm doing affiliate marketing specifically for a company, but I'm also hoping to expand that into the blog and be able to make, you know, more money through affiliate marketing on the blog. And I've read, I can't remember now off the top of my head, it's another personal finance blogger, but she publishes her income reports as well. And she makes a bulk of her income just through affiliate links on her site.
Michelle Groder.
Michelle Schroeder-Garner. Yeah, I've taken her course. Yeah. It's really good. So that's awesome. So basically, if you were giving advice to somebody who is in the same position that you were in, they're a young professional or any professional, and they're toying with the idea of quitting their job to travel, would you do things exactly the same way you did them? And what would you do differently?
I think what I would suggest to other people is to start a side hustle, start a side gig while you're still at your full-time job, and wait until you're making a decent income from your side gig before you quit your job. That's what I would do differently, I think.
What level of income for someone who wants to travel? So you travel through Southeast Asia. What level of income per month do you think someone would need?
Part of that depends on how quickly you're traveling. So I went all around Southeast Asia in just a month. You know, some people there will stay in Thailand for a month. If you're traveling slowly, I mean, you could easily live off of $500 US dollars a month there. That would be like luxury living. If you're traveling a lot, taking a lot of flights, it's going to be more expensive. But I would say definitely no more than 1,000 US dollars for a month, even if you're traveling very quickly.
Do you have any income or savings goals for yourself in the next year?
Yeah, definitely. I think in the next year, my goal is to be making more money than I was as a lawyer. And I think that's a reasonable goal for me.
What?
Oh. Yeah.
Wow. So you think affiliate marketing and doing other types of remote jobs are the way to get there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I have no background in online marketing or in any of this. I've just been learning everything on my own since starting the blog last summer. So I'm still new to it, but knowing what I know, I just know like how ludicrous it can be. And it definitely takes hustle. Going back to your last question, for somebody who's in the position I was in and wanting to quit their jobs to travel, I think one thing that you definitely need is the ability to hustle, or at least the desire to hustle, because it does take hard work. It's not easy. It's not like you just quit and go travel and, you know, have a great time. It takes a lot of hard work, but I think it does pay off. And part of my goal is to make my income or at least mostly passive in, you know, 5 years or so, with the idea of early retirement in mind.
Do you ever have days where you're just like, oh my God, I just quit my job, I'm not going to make it? Or is the key to finding people who have made it and really like motivating yourself through others?
I think the key is finding people who have made it and motivating yourself through others. I think mindset is such a big part of all of this, and your attitude towards things. If you believe you can do it and you put in the work, you know, that matches your belief, then I think you'll be able to do it. But it's about believing in yourself. It's about, you know, putting in the work and not having too many of those days where you sit back and think, oh my gosh, what did I just do? Like, I've ruined my life. I've got to go back to this stable career and fall back on what's safe.
That's amazing. So Hope, hearing Diana's story, what keeps you still in school, I guess? Like, why aren't you wanting to be one of those Mark Zuckerberg dropouts who's starting her own online business?
You know, that's a fabulous question, because I think about dropping out of school way too much. I think honestly, it's just knowing that a lot of things are just so much easier with a college degree. So I'm part of a few digital nomad groups, and there are simple things like teaching English online to kids that require a college degree, you know, even if you're qualified without a college degree. Like, there's no test that you can take to prove that you are. They just require one. And so I think right now my goal is just to graduate. Honestly, I don't even really care how well I do anymore or what my major is even. I just need that degree. And then afterwards, I think I'll start thinking about maybe doing what Diana's doing or something in that general area.
That's smart.
That's really smart. So we typically ask all of our guests this one question. What is your wildest dream? Diana, we'll start with you.
Honestly, my wildest dream was to quit my job and have the freedom to travel whenever and wherever I want and have that financial freedom as well. And it's crazy to me. It's crazy to say that I think I'm well on my way to achieving that life dream. I've found something that can give me financial freedom. And, you know, the facts are that I've been traveling like crazy these past few months. In just a few months, I've been over 20 countries on 4 continents. I've basically been traveling nonstop. And I don't plan to stop. I have plans already for future travels. I am planning on hiking Mount Kilimanjaro in February and going around that part of Africa a little more. Just big things like that I never, that, you know, I always dreamed about, but I never expected to be my reality.
And Hope, what about you?
Well, I think when you're a university student who really just does not like school, everything becomes a wildest dream. So I have many. I spend a lot of time thinking about it. You know, there ranges from I would love to be an astronaut to, you know, I'd love to move to some remote mountainous area and just live as a nomad.
I want to be a mountain girl. I want to be a mountain girl.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess a more realistic wildest dream is I one day hope to have enough financial capability to just be able to like move somewhere and do completely nonprofit work without needing to worry about finances, without needing to like ask people to sponsor me and stuff, because that does take a lot of energy and it is a lot of work to just find that sponsorship. And so, yeah, just being able to support myself financially to, you know, do things that I actually love doing, like traveling or volunteering at different places. Yeah.
Wow. So your story is so motivational for people. If people want to learn more about you guys and connect with you and ask you questions, where can they find you?
Yeah, well, they can head over to our blog, movementblog.com, and our contact info is all there. We love to connect with people on social media. So we're active on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, anything. Just shoot us a direct message. We'll definitely get back to you. Shoot us an email. Our emails are diana@movementblog.com and hope@movementblog.com. Very easy to remember. Just shoot us an email, connect with us, reach out to us. We love engaging with our followers, with other bloggers, with anyone who has a passion for any of the things we're passionate about.
MVMTblog.com. Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for talking with us. And I know you have me thinking about things differently. What about you, Gwen?
Absolutely. Yeah, you guys have definitely started my tired, overlogged brain moving again.
Churning.
Churning in more than one way.
Yeah. So thank you so much. And talk to you guys later.
Awesome. Talk to you later. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Go to our website, firedrillpodcast.com, to continue the discussion and get the link to our private Facebook group.
If you like us, leave us a review on iTunes. If you're like me, you have no idea how to do that. So, in the podcast app or in iTunes, search for Fire Drill Podcast, find it, click the Reviews tab, and write something to make my mother proud of me. We read every single review and want to say thank you from the bottom of our hearts for making this podcast possible.